Okie doke, good morning to you once again, or good morning for the first time if you've just tuned in. It is your 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio on this 6th of July 2023. Another example of abuse of taxpayers' money to satisfy ego, believes this listener. Who is responsible? Who allocated the money and whose money was it? What was the impact in the spending of this money on other local programmes and staff? What RTE committee signed off on this? Were the RTE board consulted? Why would anyone spend money on such a bird-brained idea? And who allocated and paid for the massive promotion and advertising budget? That's in relation to Toy Story the musical. Hi, RTE has to pay. This was all taxpayers' money. 8 million they received from the Office of Communications when Dennis Naughton was minister, and they just spent on everything and anyone. No sense of responsibility. That comes in from Nolene. Minister Donnelly, abortion is not healthcare. Strange how there's no money to provide service to real humans, but no problem providing instant money to kill the innocent without a voice. Now, some people believe it to be healthcare, others clearly not. This listener amongst them. Has the Minister of Housing agreed to come on the show to explain the enhanced scheme? Normally tripping over themselves to spin these days. He obviously doesn't think it's good enough. People here should not forget McConnell's refusal. He doesn't appear to know the difference between being allowed to mislead people uninterrupted and fair questioning. That comes in from Martin. And the simple question is that, you know, it's stated publicly that this is a 100% redress scheme. I saw the press release. And the simple question would be, could you explain how it's a 100% redress scheme? You know, who can qualify for this? You know, that's a question that no one wants to try and answer, especially if you're announcing the scheme or backing it, because it would be a very difficult one to answer. There was assurances on this programme through, in fairness, a tough line of questioning, if the truth be told, that there would be no sliding scale. Well, there is the sliding scale. It was said on this programme, following a tough line of questioning, that that foundations would be included. The clip available, if you wish. Foundations were not included. So I can understand why people might not want to be questioned on this issue. But that being said, I and other people have a responsibility, I think. Mine's not, you know, mandated as such. It's just one I feel I have, is to try and get answers to questions for people and those that it affects their real lives. One lady tweeted something, I can't remember because the notifications on Twitter have been really quite busy of late, but it was an important, it was 5 or 6 or 7 words. I wish I could find it here now, but it was I don't want to misquote it. Oh, there's so much stuff here. But it was a person who tweeted me about their situation. They have a child with special needs, I believe, and they said simply that they can't access the scheme. But it wasn't simple. It's not that. I can't get to it. I can't find it here. I will dig it out and read it to you. But that's the reality of it. It doesn't matter what I think or what other people think. It's about whether or not people who've been waiting for this to give them some hope of a future, to give them some hope of leaving something to their children that's of any worth, and that being taken away. As I say, it's just been crazy the last couple of days on social media, so I can't find that particular message from a lady. But anyway, that's the important part of all of this, in my view. Back to the RTE situation. A caller believes it is fraud. If a guy steals a loaf of bread from a shop, it's jail for them. They're stealing our money, yes, covered up by what Matty McGrath was saying yesterday. He was saying the Gardaí should be involved, regards Brendan. Well, they got their own legal advice, which is another really quite remarkable thing. RTE got their own legal advice, and they were told by their own legal advice that there was no fraud. Right, okay. There is a lot of heartache in my family, but we spoke yesterday, and this is why it's really useful in terms of a podcast or the video podcast. And I want to say a very good morning, by the way, just as a remind you to Siobhan, Christina, Charlie, Annie, Paul, Rosemary, amongst the many people who are watching the show on our YouTube channel and on Facebook. YouTube, it's Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your smart TV. You can watch on your Fire Stick, your phone, tablet, laptop. But also you can look back at programs that we've already broadcast. And we had two people on the program yesterday, Eleanor and Elaine, from an organization called CRY. We spoke to a mother who's 6 foot strong, healthy, 38-year-old son. She came in and he was watching TV. She came in and found him dead. And she says, as she tried to do CPR, it was clear that she was working on her son who had passed away. Incredibly, incredibly sad. But she engaged with the services of CRY. And it's worth watching it back again, especially if you maybe have been bereaved and you're looking for people to talk to or people that might understand. I hope that piece might be of benefit to you. This caller says, there is a lot of heartache in my family. I resonated with the lady from CRY. I've lost grandchildren and my wife. But Greg, good news, my grandson Daniel passed his driving test today and I'm so proud of him. Life is incredibly difficult at times, but it's so important to celebrate the good times too. Thank you for the show yesterday morning from Granda Seamus in Stranorlar. And well done to you, Granda, and clearly a really good Granda. You've been through it, but you recognise the fantastic achievement from your son, grandson Daniel, and you can see the hope in that. And we're thinking on to you, Seamus, as well. My son has dyspraxia with concerns with ADHD. He also has dyslexia. The doctor made a referral to CAMHS. The referral had to go in 5 times because they kept sending it back saying it was filled. It wasn't filled in right. Then I got a letter back saying they need a report before they can move forward. That report will not be finalised until August. All our concerns, even with the GP writing to them, are being ignored. This appointment with CAMHS is only the beginning of trying to get a referral. I thought the HSC was there to help us, not frustrate us more. Sorry, we'll see if we can make any inquiries to assist there. Hi, Greg. Can we have a discussion about if all Ireland is put to the people for a vote, what happens to the National Health Service? At present, we have free hospital services, free doctors, free dental, free fire service, free ambulance, free prescriptions, free mental health services, etc. Who will pay for these things if an All-Ireland becomes a reality? I'm from the north, living in the south, and in my opinion, an All-Ireland is never going to happen, as when the public realise the implications of an All-Ireland and the loss of the National Health Service alone will be a deal-breaker. When you explain that to see a doctor, €60, to see a dentist, €60, fire service call out, €120, what will happen to the staff in these institutions? If an All-Ireland came to be when realisation of this is happening to people in the north, common sense dictates a no vote will happen. That comes in from Joe in Donegal. I mean, if you're listening in to the show in Northern Ireland, is that something you consider? Because the last time I was speaking to, I believe it was Piers Doherty, it was ahead of some conferences that they were having around the country to discuss the future of Ireland. What would a united Ireland look like? Like, when it comes down to the vote, I don't really think it is necessarily going to be people's aspiration for a 32 county or not, or whether it be green or orange, as you know, as some people term it. It is going to be down to the realities. Like, what does the healthcare look like? What would it mean in terms of our healthcare here? What role would Alton na Gelvin have? What role would Letterkenny University Hospital have? I mean, in reality, I think the majority of people across the country, especially south of a, I don't know what line it might be, Monaghan-Sligo line, you know, that's where the debate and the conversation might be had, rather than the politics or nationalism versus unionism. So I think to some extent, Joe's really right there. I think, you know, we haven't really talked about, tried to have the conversation about what might the real conversation be ahead of any vote on a united Ireland. What do you think? 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and text. If you're from the north and have an insight from that perspective, of course, 00 35 386 60 25,000. That being said, I think most times, isn't it, you store the numbers in WhatsApp. It has the prefix on it there anyway. So now, following inquiries from the leader of AIN2, Deputy Paddy Tobin, we've learnt that over 1,700 people have been with or have been on a learner permit for over 30 years. Now, just to remind you again, you're not allowed to apply for a third or subsequent learner permit unless you've taken and failed a driving test in the previous 2 years, or more importantly, the thing, as I mentioned, I think needs addressed, you've made an application for the exam. Now, we know the huge pressure in terms of long waits for primarily, I think, young drivers, but not exclusively. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. So what was your motivation for seeking out these figures then, and what's your takeaway from them?
Yeah, and I also want to give credit to Owen Murphy from the Irish Mirror as well for the work that he's done on this too. But I suppose, first of all, the road safety is a very, very important issue. And the government have created a lot of new laws and a lot of changes in recent times around road safety. We've made the point a number of times that if the government just implemented the laws as they were and policed them properly, it would make road safety better. So the learner permit does what it says in the tin. It's for use for people to learn how to drive. And, you know, it's only a short-term permit. And it's just, we find it incredible that this government has allowed the situation to arise, where right now 11,700 people have been driving on a learner permit for 20 years, which is an exceptional figure. So that shows you that those learner permits are not being used to learn. They're being used to do long-term driving. So, you know, according to the government's own statistics, a person is a safer driver when they've passed the test, i.e. the government is allowing a situation persist whereby we have drivers that are not as safe driving for years and years and years. And, you know, one of the real issues that has frustrated me in my time in political activism is just the incompetency of the administration in Ireland. That level of maladministration, that lack of accountability that seeps through so much of Irish government and councils, etc. And this is another example of it. So we have, you know, this crazy situation where the government is basically allowing for nearly 12,000 people to drive for two decades without a full driver's license. And, you know, it's similar to what's happening in other sectors, such as you have people waiting for NCT tests for, you know, months and months. You have hospital bills, you know, surging through their budgets and their timescales for months, you know, for years and years. We've even a person waiting 14 years at the moment for their first application for asylum into this country to be processed. And that's an incredible thing, and it's wrong. So we need to get to grips with the maladministration in this country and fix it.
But, I mean, road traffic laws are a basket case anyway. I mean, if you challenge them, you get off. That seems to be the case. If you know, you know. Because the amount of people that successfully challenge that certain elements of the road traffic laws, they almost routinely get off with it. The figures are absolutely astronomical. But in relation to this, one of the simple solutions would be that you have to sit your test. Now, it doesn't solve all of it, because we don't know if people are using it for ID purposes or what have you. I mean, there's a lot of advantages to having a full license. But, like, everyone listening probably has someone in their family or connected to them waiting for a driving test. We've got loads of people with no intention of ever sitting their driving test. So at the very least, you can only get another permit if you sit your exam and fail. Simple thing. I mean, that wouldn't take too much legislation.
No, it's a very simple fix. And what's obviously happening is people are being allowed to apply for a driving test. And then when the driving test comes up, they're entitled to cancel that, but they still keep their permit license, the learner permit license. And, you know, they can keep going pretty much every 2 years in that scenario. And in many cases, if they postpone the driving test in time, they'll actually get their money back as well. So there may be very little cost to a person other than the renewal of the permit on a regular basis.
Because I spoke to the RSA not quite some time ago, the head of the RSA then, I believe she's off now representing insurance companies. But I was interviewing the head of the RSA at that time, and they says, well, this is not, you know, it's not awful. People aren't turning up for their tests. And we kind of had a little tete-a-tete over that one, if the truth be told. But of course, if you have a system whereby people can perpetually have a learner's permit because they can book a test and not turn up, I mean, that's, you know, don't always blame us. You know, the system's at fault here.
But yeah, like, it's common sense, Greg. It's just common sense that if you see people abusing this so obviously, the very simple thing to do is to make sure that a person can't postpone their exam over and over again. And it's just as, you know, you may get, you know, three strikes and you're out. So if you postpone your application three times, you're out. And but again, there's an instinct in this country where this maladministration is allowed to continue. And the reason why it's allowed to continue is because there is no accountability. And accountability is the best tool to make sure something doesn't happen. Because, you know, if there's no cost to you or I or to anybody else, there's no penalty for doing something wrong, well, then there's no change in behaviour.
How do you fix that, though? Because, you know, any slight changes to road traffic legislation or licensing laws, they're, you know, they're delayed in either the Dáil or the Seanad. There's huge lobby groups, seemingly, that oppose a lot of changes like this. Some would say it doesn't matter really who you elect because, you know what I mean, they can't work with this broken permanent government. So it's great. We could appoint you as the Minister for Observation, perhaps, because you're telling us what we know. What the public want to know is, what change is this? What change is this culture of a lack of accountability, of broken systems? Like,
okay,
we were speaking to someone earlier on who's trying to get a young person into the CAM services, and they're finding the HSE is actually frustrating them rather than assisting them. You know, and it all ties into the same thing. So what actually can be done to make change?
A very, very simple thing would be when people do wrong that they lose their jobs. So this whole RTE crack that everybody's watching at the moment is, we're seeing where, you know, people have, you know, been living on serious largesse in terms of the amount of money that they've been receiving, the amount of money that's been spent on slush funds, etc. We're seeing an absolute lack of governance in what's happening. People don't even know what's happening in their own organization. Now, my worry is that after all of this circus on the television, nobody's actually going to lose their job. Nobody's actually going to have any penalty financially to them at all. Yes, what's likely to happen is that there will be a reorganization of the executive board in there, and that will mean that people may have to step down from the board, but they will get a severance package, they'll get their pensions, they'll get their wages for a period of time, etc. So there's no real cost to them to do that. So the key ingredient to accountability is cost. And if a person doesn't fulfill their contract, if they don't do their job properly, if a TD or a minister allows for this kind of rubbish to go on in the driving situation for 20, 35 years, well, then there should be a cost. That person should lose their job. And that's not like unusual in other European countries. When you have a silly thing, a stupid thing like this happening, which could in effect lead to people being killed on the roads, a person would lose their job. A person would be held accountable. And that's the key missing ingredient in this country.
Just back to the RTE thing in relation to that. And this is strange because a lot of people aren't calling for this. Whoever, whether it was contrived or not, but incredibly convenient, whoever sought or accepted the resignation of Dee Forbes, who was then blamed for everything that happens at RTE, they all should be removed from that board as well. Ignorance is not a defence. Oh, well, we thought the. I mean, obviously, there's the executive board and then the board above them, isn't it? That board above them should also be disbanded because they rob the public of answers. Now, it is all very convenient that they sought a resignation, eventually accepted it, and now Ms. Forbes can't speak to the committee. The one person, really, that can answer questions. Again, it's not only the executive board that needs to go from RTE. It's the board that allowed that situation in full knowledge of what was to come just 3 days later. But again, that's not even, they're not even talking about that in the committee meetings, which there was some reference made to it. But anyone who accepted that resignation, their position to me is untenable.
I agree. I think it's an incredible situation that, you know, ignorance is being used as an excuse by many people in these committee hearings. But like, if you were in a private business and you were getting paid a big wage to do something and you said, well, I just didn't know, you just wouldn't last in that job after a period of time. Now, I'm a left of center political activist, and I do believe that the state should have a role in certain aspects of our lives. But I will tell you, the older I get, the more frustrated I become, because right now, if you put the word national in front of any project, you're nearly guaranteed for that project to burst all its budgets, to go way beyond time, and to cost the citizen massive money. So the National Children's Hospital, the National Maternity Hospital, the National Broadband, RTE, the state is being allowed to run massive projects really, really poorly. And the reason it's happening is because there's no accountability.
But there is a sense that it doesn't matter who's elected to work with the system, that it's the system itself to its very core that is in control, that runs the situation, that is untouchable. We've had the promises of people saying, well, elect me and we'll go in and we'll change things. But at the end of the day...
I'll tell you this. There's one of the major problems in the political class is because so many politicians are passengers on their buses. They're not steering their buses. What's happening is senior civil servants, the long-term civil servants, are actually in control of the situation. I will tell you, when Aintu gets into government, we will have a situation that if any civil servant does not fulfill their contract, that civil servant will be released from that contract. They will no longer be in that position because we cannot run a country in the manner that's happening at the moment. It's costing far too much for citizens, and at the standard of service and health and housing and so much else is far too low than it should be. And, you know, this country is grinding to a halt in many areas, especially with the level of bureaucracy that's been put into the system as well.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Have a good day. Take care. That is Deputy Pádraig Tobin, who is the leader of Aintu. Again, you know, good luck to him if he thinks he can save the system. How then would you stop people simply retiring from a position or moving on, and then they're beyond, they are then beyond the reach of the authorities? Who's going to negotiate with the unions to ensure that you can just sack someone? You know what I mean? Listen, he knows more than I do, but it's certainly not something I would ever commit to try and change, because I don't really think you possibly could. Right, so okie doke, let me take a break. Stay where you are. Welcome back to the programme. There's a new film that's available, and it's showing in Eclipse Cinemas, and it's called Under the Kitchen Sink. And the person behind it is, or one of those, is Cailin Gohan, who joins us on the programme now. Cailin, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's good to speak to you. And it's funny, I was having this conversation about putting stuff literally under the kitchen sink yesterday, and by pure coincidence, because we have a toddler around the house, Cailin, and by pure coincidence, I'm talking to you today. Take us back to when you were 18 months old.
Well, I obviously don't remember quite well, but I got under the kitchen sink. I got access to caustic soda, which is a grain cleaner, crystal rice grain cleaner, and my mum was in the toilet at the time. It was literally five seconds, and I drank a bit of it, and it burned my whole insides and my mouth and stuff, and left me in a bad way.
Yeah, and it was only because of quick reactions that were able to speak to you at all that you didn't lose your life, Cailin?
Yeah. There was a few scares at the start, but after a long journey, I'm here. I'm able to tell my story, and I'm happy to do so.
Now, you have had numerous operations over the last, well, really since the age of 18. I mean, do you have a number on it, and what were those what have those operations achieved, and, you know, why were they carried out on you, Cailin?
I've actually had 64 operations since that. So that was about 22 years ago. So basically, I couldn't really eat properly, and I couldn't crawl properly, and I'm operating. Now, a lot of them weren't successful, but thankfully, some of them were. So I'm able to talk to you today, and I'm able to eat relatively normal food. And
very good. Now, people would maybe have heard your story before. You were on that TV3 Virgin Media documentary, Temple Street. So remind people of your role in that documentary. It was your story, obviously, but in Temple Street Hospital.
I think it was one of my first two operations in 2012. I filmed most of it, I like it nearly so much, honest, but there was no seeing my mum and my size and that were talking about what was being done to me and how you were trying to improve my life, and I did, so thank God. But
now you and you've got a good friend, haven't you? You and Ryan Field, is a mate of yours,
yeah,
have come together to make your own film now. So talk to us about that.
Well, we decided, why not tell my story from my perspective, because the past few years has been mostly told by my family and my doctors. And over lockdown, I was contacted by a person in Australia, and she has said that she has seen my story on YouTube, and she had been through something similar, and seeing my story had inspired her to, you know, push through her tragedy. And then we thought, why not make a documentary in the hopes of inspiring people who might be in similar situations? Because I have the privilege to and show people that no matter what happens, you know, there's always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a real story of inspiration. And Caelan, too, is there an element to it? Now, I haven't had an opportunity to see it, though, because, you know, we I think everyone knows the dangers of putting dangerous substances under the sink. And we all do it, you know, not all. We don't all do it. Lots of people do it. Do you hope that, too, in this story, that it sort of brings home the importance of making sure some of these items that sometimes look like sweets, God knows, that to make sure they're well out of the reach of young people?
Absolutely. And we make a point of telling people that on the documentary, just to be careful that something like this doesn't happen in your own home. But we're lucky these days is that the bottles are tightly locked and harder to get access to, but you never know what can happen in the space of a short time. So we're just letting people know that it is easily done and it is easily presentable.
Okay, and the documentary is got a cinema release. In fact, as I mentioned, it's in the Clip Cinemas, and people can check out when it's on. And also, Caelan, I mean, it's great. It's great to get a cinema audience, but it's the kind of thing that you'd want as many people to see as possible. So, are you looking for any other outlets for it to be released or is it available? Will it be available after it's been on in the cinema anywhere else?
Well, it'll be on YouTube anyway, for sure. But we're not sure about anything else at the minute, but you never know. It could be shown in different cinemas in any country in the country, so we'll see how it goes on the 20th of July.
And you and Ryan, did you think it would get this far when you come up with the idea? Has it been a pleasant surprise?
It has been. We're both very nervous and anxious about the reception we've gotten, and it hasn't even been released yet, but we weren't expecting half this reception, but we're happy for it, and the more people can make aware of the dangers of chemicals is all the better, isn't it?
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so Under the Kitchen Sink, tell us where people can watch it locally and at what times. I think you mentioned a date and time there, Caelan.
Yeah, it'll be on the 20th of July in the Cinemas Bungalow. And after that, we're not sure. If it sells out, it'll be in the cinema again. But after that, it'll be on YouTube.
Brilliant. Well done, Caelan.
After all that, guys.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
All right, good man. Well done. Thank you very much indeed. Really appreciate it. That's Caelan Golan there. Caelan Golan. At 18 months old, he drank caustic soda, caused horrific injuries, and he could have lost his life only for a quick medical intervention. He's had 60-plus operations, but now he can speak again, he can taste food again, and as I say, many of you might have seen him on that documentary Temple Street, which was on TV3 or Virgin Media, as it's now known. All right, thank you for that. Okay, what about the young people, says this listener, who have their lessons took and applied for? Their test has to wait 8, maybe 9 months, but they are still being charged for insurance as a learner driver through no fault of their own. Why should us young people pay thousands on insurance while they wait for months for their driving test? It's a horrendous situation. And it only makes it, I think, even more pressurised that all of it leads to that one test. I don't know why they have to wait so long. It's terrible, really. Can anyone, Greg, remember what was the main topic in government before the whole saga started? Surely there's more important issues to be discussed. Most people couldn't care less about a couple of extra pounds Ryan Tubridy received. This practice was probably known about for a long time. I think we are being distracted from other serious issues like Irish neutrality, which was, if I'm not mistaken, the headline. Does anyone have an opinion on this? It's an interesting point that you make, but of course, again, as I said, I think this conversation, and Deputy Tobin mentioned this as well, and I've said it in the past, I think this whole thing that's happening in RTE talks to the whole public services situation as well. I mean, the Dáil is going into recess shortly. They're going to have their holidays in the not-too-distant future. And again, as it relates to that whole conversation about Irish neutrality, I think that's actually hardened the view of people that they don't want to go down that route. And in fact, it's given a voice to people that may had a feeling on it but never spoke about it in the past. Right, okay. But I take your point, but it is not insignificant either. Rightio, you are tuned to the 9 till noon show. Just to remind you of the telephone numbers, WhatsApps and text to 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 00 353 86 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, 07491 25000. Okay. We have learned that a foundation set up in memory of Derry City footballer Ryan McBride may be forced to close over funding cuts. This according to members of the charity. Gareth McKay is a board member of the Ryan McBride Foundation and joins us now. Thank you very much for joining us, Gareth.
No problem, Greg. Thanks very much for having me.
Remind the listeners as to the why this foundation, this charity, was founded and what work it does.
Yes, yeah, so Ryan obviously was captain of Derry City. He was born and lived and passed away just, you know, a few doors from the stadium. As a lad growing up, played local football, but he was never in any of the academy systems and never really picked out. And he was playing sort of local pub football when he was 17 and got noticed by some of the coaches at Derry City, John Quigg and Eddie Sadak. And he was asked to come and train with the first team. And Ryan had kind of played a bit, but hadn't really focused enough probably to be successful. Unfortunately, his mother passed away when he was 17 from cancer, and it kind of changed Ryan's life. He focused, and he went to Derry City to the first team, and Stephen Kenny was the manager, obviously Ireland manager now. And Stephen saw something in Ryan and developed him, and within 6 months, you know, he'd gone from playing football, pub football, to playing against Shamrock Rovers and the Brandywell, marking Gary Twigg, who was probably one of the most deadliest strikers the league seen, and kept him quiet the whole game, and Derry won, and Ryan's career took off from there, and he then eventually became captain of the club. And you know, for anyone in Derry, becoming captain of Derry City is, you know, it's as good as playing for Man United or Celtic.
And I think the story of how he got there made it all the more relatable. A local lad and finding his path, and then going on to achieve what he wanted to do. And I think for all of us, we remember when that news came through in March of, I think it was 2017,
and
just the shock and the outpouring then of love and respect in Ryan's direction. So the foundation was then created with the aim of doing what?
So the foundation, I suppose it's support, assist, and inspire is the three words that we have. That's kind of our three values, and it was set up really to try and help young people we understand that it's not really our role to try and create footballers. That's for professional clubs. But we use football, we use sport, we use being healthy as a means to try and help children basically reach their potential, whatever it is, and it's to show them that, you know, they can achieve, and it doesn't matter what background they come from or where they come
from.
And
it's discipline, isn't it? And it's routine, and it's with other people. We see it in boxing clubs, we see it in football clubs, we see it in athletics. It's proven that it can help either keep young people on the straight and narrow, or give them a focus, or you know, pull them away from a different type of a life. Not just that, but I mean, it can have those benefits as well.
Yeah, it's a massive social aspect to it. That's what it is. And, you know, we work with children from 3 years up to about 14, but then we also bring young adults into the foundation as coaches on apprenticeships. So we give them a job and give them a chance to try and get a role in football. And we also, our coaches are trained to go and work with children then with additional needs. So we worked in Arden and She School. We've worked in Foy Down Syndrome Trust. So it's a wide, the foundation is going to be a wide scope, but it is all around, you know, healthy activity, healthy living. And as part of the program that we've lost the funding on, we built in issues around, you know, bullying, racism. So each week had a different aspect, and the coaches spent 10 minutes building that into the sessions, explaining what bullying is, and it's not always hitting someone. Sometimes it can be ignoring people, and then we get them active. So there's loads of different aspects to it. It's not just here's a football and away you go.
Yeah, exactly. So the primary school community project was supported through the executive, working with 30 schools, 2,000 children involved every single week. Then you've got the coaches that you've mentioned, and then out of the blue you received an email that discussed funding. When did that happen? What did it say?
So around about probably maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago, we received an email just advising that funding had been cut, and that, you know, everyone should expect that they're not going to receive their full funding that they received the year before. We were fine with that. We understand the realities around things, and we understand what's happening with government. We understand the effects of Brexit and everything else. So we had meetings, and we looked at ways of absorbing the loss of the funding we're going to have. And we did a Go Red for Ryan scheme, which was great, and everyone got involved in. And then last week we got an email to say, actually, we've received zero. And that is just unsustainable, and it's too big a hurdle really to climb.
I think if we opened up the text line and asked people who didn't know to guess how much funding it received from the Northern Ireland office last year, and given what we've spoken about, and given the fact that they're talking about pressure on budgets, I think people would guess £250,000, £500,000 or whatever. But the figures that you were able to eke out so much from was relatively small last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we managed we got 45,000 last year, and the foundation supplements that with some funds to keep it going.
But you need that core central funding, though, really, that gets you going, don't you?
You do, because you need the certainty that you can afford to employ the staff that run the project. So the foundation's run by a board of volunteers. We all have our own jobs and we do our own things, but we have coaches and we have a coordinator that runs the foundation, runs all the schemes, highly skilled, number of different training schemes in relation to, you know, dealing with kids with additional needs, all of that. And you just need to know that you've got the core funding that you can commit. They say the schools, look, we can be there 2 hours every week for, you know, 37, 38 weeks, whatever it is of the school term. Because you've got to make the commitment from the start to the end. You know, it's not good luck for the children either if you kind of flit in and flit out because your funding's gone. So you need that bulk that you know you can commit.
What can be done now, though? I mean, look, listen, I don't know if there's any advantage of getting into the politics, but there's an awful lot of people sitting doing nothing at the moment. They'll argue they're working in the constituencies, blah, 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 blah. But there's a lot of money being given to politicians who are effectively not at work, some would feel, which makes even the likes of the 40,000 pale into absolute insignificance. I mean, is there any route to an appeal on this? Because this is not only this project. This actually put the future of the foundation into doubt, Gareth.
It does. It certainly puts it in the doubt. in terms of what we do at the minute, we will not be able to deliver what we're delivering. In fact, we'll be able to deliver very little. The foundation will always be there because we want Ryan's name and legacy to, yeah, to keep going. But in terms of the format that we're in now, the staff that we're in, the guys that we have running it, it's just not going to be sustainable. What can be done now? Well, there's no appeal mechanism to the executive office, so that's gone. We can start to apply to other funds, but that's a longish process.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you know, we're already contacting Children in Need. We're contacting the National Lottery Fund. We're looking at there's a SEPU fund as well that's heavily funded by the Irish government. There's obviously a potential that we may have to consult with Irish government agencies and see if they can fund it, because we can incorporate border schools, because obviously our project straddle the border. We do schools in Colmore and Hollybush, which are literally a stone throw from the border. So we can make this a cross-border. It's currently a cross-community project.
Yeah, why not bring it across the border as well, for sure. Yeah. As you know, lots of people in North Donegal follow Derry City. Okay, well, listen, keep us updated on any developments. I hope something comes from this. The money we're talking about for what's delivered is, in the wider scale of things, it's small change in terms of overall budgets. And I just hope that someone sees sense. And briefly, is there a fundraiser or anywhere that if someone wants to contribute, they can?
We haven't gone down that route at the moment, Greg, okay, because we did, as I said, when we knew we were getting cut, we did do a fundraiser a couple of months ago at Go Red for Ryan Day, which was
okay,
really
well
supported.
That, yeah.
Yeah, so we just don't want to go back to the public, because we know it cost a living crisis at the minute, so we're looking at other options. But yeah, certainly in the future, it may happen.
All right, hopefully. Well, keep us in the loop, Gareth, if you don't mind. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Okay, that was Gareth McKay, board member of the Ryan McBride Foundation. They only got 45,000 last year, nothing this year from the Northern Ireland executive.